All right, John. Well, back to the war at hand. It's been almost 40 years since Saddam Hussein kicked all the foreign oil companies out of Iraq and nationalized those oil fields. And today, as U.S. troops pull out of Iraqi cities, the Western oil companies are going right back in. Hard to miss the political implications of that. Well, they're going into bid for contracts to develop the oil and gas fields. And Kara Lahoyos is chief energy correspondent for the Financial Times. She joins us now from London. Kara, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hello. Good morning. Thanks for joining us. These service contracts that the Western oil companies have are based on cash, and they're not as lucrative as we might expect. I saw one on the order of $2.3 billion, which seems like a small number for a Western oil company. Is this an unusual arrangement that's developing?
It is not completely unusual, but it's absolutely critical, and it's been the point of contention for the last few years. These are service contracts, and the oil companies are being asked to basically help Iraq shore up and repair the oil fields that are already producing oil. So they are quite limited, but the hope is, at least the oil companies' hope is, that this is a toehold they'll gain, and then they'll eventually be let loose on the big oil fields that haven't been fully developed yet or haven't even been found yet. And that's why they are accepting these kind of service contracts, as you said, which basically just pay them a fee for what they do, which is really not something they generally like to do. They like to gain on the upside. They like the challenge, and they like to be rewarded for a challenge, and they really don't like to be your oil field plumbers.
And just to be clear, they like to sell the oil on the world market. That's the business, not being paid in cash for drilling holes or leveling out mountains that need to be leveled out to drill oil.
That's right. They don't like being paid in cash. They'd rather be paid in oil. And very importantly as well is that they want to book the reserves with the SEC, basically to tell investors, U.S. investors, how well they're doing and how many reserves they have to play with. They have to register those reserves with the SEC. And that becomes very difficult under a service contract. So that's another reason they don't like service contracts.
Okay. Well, there's a huge political dimension here that we absolutely have to talk about. You didn't have to be a conspiracy fringe theorist to suspect that oil interests were a huge part of the motivator for the U.S. and Britain to get involved in Iraq in the first place. So now that the Western companies are going back in for what you call the toehold, what part of that political dimension of getting Western oil companies right back into the war zone is playing out now?
Well, I think for the Iraqis, the important that there's been a political dimension too, because there's been great debate over whether they're giving away their oil and it's theirs, rightfully the oil of the Iraqi people. But I think that's a bit of a red herring, and I think that has been solved to a certain degree, at least for now, by the fact that these companies are coming in a very, very limited capacity. I would say that oil played an important role in the decision over whether or not to go into Iraq. But I mean, the one thing that I would say as well is that war has always mm-hmm. been bad for oil production.
Right.
And in fact, has often been bad also in terms of eventually letting big oil companies back in. So if that really had been the strategy, it would have been a completely foolhardy one, because we have had 4 years of Iraq not producing as much oil as it could and not producing as much oil as it did under Saddam Hussein.
But that's not necessarily true for the long term. I mean, you might look at a 7-year dip and then a 40-year boom to get a hold of those oil fields.
Yeah, but look at
Iraq.
Iran, right? Iran produced more than twice what it does now at its peak. And it's never, ever been able to recover from that. And it holds the second largest oil reserves in the world. Venezuela, these aren't things that stand in the way for 5 years. These are, in the end, the things that stand in the way for 20 years. So
we've got a war reservoir here, Carola. You know, it's great to talk to you again. We haven't spoken with you in a while. I mean, we were talking to you every hour, it seemed like, when oil was at $140 a barrel.
That's right.
What politically in this story is a competition between Total and Royal Dutch Shell and Exxon and the Russians versus the sort of traditional rivalry of these solely Western companies?
Well, when I came down here, six of the eight fields had been bid on. The envelopes had been opened for those. And what has evolved is interesting. BP won the Rumaila field. They ganged up with CNPC, which is the Chinese oil companies. The Turks are around. There's one Indian bid. There's a Korean bid. And then the usual guys you would expect, Royal Dutch Shell, BP, ConocoPhillips. Italy's any Occidental, but no Russians. The Russians wanted West Corner, and that hasn't been bid on yet. I think the interesting thing is watching Western oil companies get together in partnership with the Chinese, who bring in very deep pockets and a natural marketplace for their oil. And in the end, it's been hard, cold cash. I mean, these guys are walking up to the oil minister, handing them his envelope, giving them the number, the cost at which they will develop the field. And the minister is saying, right, BP offered this, Exxon offered this, and we didn't like either of them. In this case, they said, we didn't like either of those bids. Reduce your costs. And BP came back with a cheaper cost. So,
cold hard cash.
So it is. There's a lot of cold hard
nice,
cash.
Nice work if you can get it.
Carolyn, before we go here, as all of this swirls around them with the Western oil companies bidding and having paper bags full of cash for the ministers and everything else, the internal politics in Iraq, as all this swirls around them, up in Kirkuk and the struggles between Kurds and Arabs up there, a lot of that is based on oil. And can you just quickly give us the update on the internal politics of Western oil and whether this can still be a destabilizing factor there in Iraq?
Well, the nutshell is that yes, it can. Basically, we've got two countries in terms of the oil. If you see oil as the unifier, Kurdistan has gone ahead, developed its oil on its own, and Baghdad in the southern Iraq is going ahead and developing its oil on its own. And so there's been no rapprochement between the two, and that is the single biggest reason why there's no hydrocarbon law for the entire country. And that, in terms of legal terms, is one of the things that makes this adventure for the oil companies very, very uncertain, and whether or not we'll go ahead and be happy at the end of the day.
Very uncertain, and based on cash, not oil. Carol Ahoyos, Chief Energy Correspondent at FT, The Financial Times. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.